From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They called me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Andrew the Triforce Howard. Most importantly, you are you. You are here. That makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. If you are listening to our listener mail program, the evening it comes out, welcome to February 13th. No worries. It's a Thursday, not a Friday. as the calendar reckons, we have so much stuff to get to. Folks, to be honest, we learned about some crazy nuke plans of yesteryear. We got a magnificent firsthand account from a firefighter or exotic landscaper, as he prefers to be called.
Laugh. There's so much heavy stuff going on with firefighting, but it's good to have a little gallows humor, I guess, around it. That's a good one.
Oh, my gosh. Telepathy tapes, mushrooms, Bigfoot, Stefan voice. This has everything. We also got a lot of great responses to our conversation that we keep returning to. And I hope it's not me putting my own fascinations onto the group or projecting, but man, these chimera, the future of organs, especially as things get riddled with micro and nanoplastics.
And personhood, which came up on our last Strange News episode.
Strange News, yeah. In that program, we teased the mountain that became a man, a headlight I didn't use because it's kind of gendered. But we talked about the tree in Athens. We've talked extensively about something that fascinates us all, which is the argument of the ship of Theseus. And it turns out, fellow conspiracy realists, the five of us, you listening along at home, and Triforce and Matt and Noel and myself, are not the only people who are endlessly fascinated and maybe a little freaked out by the future of personhood.
Let's jump to a tiny ad break and then we'll come back and get right into that conversation.
Get great savings on all your favorite items throughout the store at Safeway. This week at Safeway, get mega packs of USDA Choice Bone-In New York Strip Steak for the member price of only $7.99 per pound. Plus, get Debbie Lilly Designed Dozen Roses for $24.99. Also this week at Safeway, get large pack berries like 2 pounds of strawberries and 18-ounce blueberries for the member price of just $4.99 each. Visit Safeway.com or head in store for more deals.
And we've returned with a message from Colby Jack Cheese. Here again, Colby Jack says, and as always, you can read this on the show if you want. With that being said, let's get to it. Listening to your most current listener mail, as at the time of writing, episode where you talk about the ethics of growing human organs in pig bags. It sounds like the name of like an industrial band. And a question struck me like a kick from a horse. What if someone was in total body paralysis and you were given the choice to, through the power of imagination for now, to transfer their mind to pig host so a new body can be grown? Is that pig a person now? A human, despite all the wetware being distinctly different from a human? Does it obtain personhood, or are they now lower on the food chain of humanity? I'll stop here to keep myself from rambling, but I will leave you with this. How do you measure personhood? Is it by intelligence? We have a hard time measuring that as far as I'm aware, or could it be language? If your dog slash cat slash fox slash fourth dimensional fluffy friend could speak to you in perfect English, could it be considered a person despite being a clear non-human? Love the show and all the interesting questions that keep me distracted from the bar fight going on today in society. Much love to you from me. Colby Jack Cheese. You know, this makes me think of, I don't know, there's a lot of depictions in like comic books, for example, of like sentient animals. There's that, what is that one, Ben? We Three? Is
yes.
that the one?
Oh,
that's amazing.
It's short banger. And beautiful and sad and brutal and speaks to a lot of this kind of stuff.
I had a feeling at the end.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I know you did. You're one for the year, whatever year that happened to have been. It is a story of supercharged animals that are given the ability to more or less communicate in kind of weird broken English, and they're also designed to be murder machines for the government. They escape from the facility in which they are being essentially tortured and converted into these things they're not meant to be, and then they are pursued by something horrific. Let's just put it that way. It's like Homeward Bound on speed and psychedelics.
Cyberpunk Homeward Bound.
Yeah, really, it's wonderful. Yeah. But it speaks to, wouldn't you say, guys, that it speaks to a lot of these questions of, like, you know, we're hearing stories now coming out about technology that could potentially one day allow us to communicate with our pets. Given that technology and the ability for animals to speak in something that is intelligible on a human language level, does that change the way we think about them? And it also comes back to this idea of what's the term that the PETA guy mentioned to us? The idea that certain animals are treated as lower than others, you know, less worthy of our care and love and respect, and more able to be seen as, you know, good eats rather than companions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What's that term, guys? Do you remember?
Speciesism.
That's the one. It's this idea that there are certain animals, like, I mean, rabbits are an interesting one that kind of fall in that line, because, yeah, people eat rabbits, but people also have rabbits for pets. In the United States, eating dogs, it would be considered more or less barbaric, but there are countries where that's acceptable as well. It does straddle the line of personhood, but I think that Colby Jack really does bring up some interesting questions. But this idea of, if a human consciousness were transferred to a quote-unquote lower life form, does that change the nature of the lower life form? And if, again, we were able to communicate with lower, what we see as lower life forms, does that elevate their, I guess, deservingness of personhood? I throw it to the room, guys.
Matt, you're throwing it as well.
I don't know. I keep thinking about these videos I've seen of Teddy, the talking porcupine. I don't know if you guys have seen these.
I don't know about this.
Okay.
Is he like a Mudang-esque figure? How have I missed Teddy, the talking porcupine?
I see their older videos, and who knows, like, when they were originally posted. I haven't done the digging, but they show up nowadays as though they just happened. But I think they go all the way back to, like, 2013, 2015, wow, things like that. But it's just a porcupine that loves chowing down on food. And while it's chowing down on food, it's going, yeah. And it just seems so human in the way that it seems to want to communicate things to the people that take care of it. And I just imagine just that idea of any animal that can speak, right? We get those things, like a lot of the birds especially, that can speak, can vocalize, and appear to respond, not just in a mocking way,
facsimile, right? Yes. Yeah,
and appear to say things to get things
and to understand the nuances of language, abstract thought, object permanence, things like that. Shout out to our Corvid bros in the crowd. What's really fascinating about this too is that Colby, you're taking the next step in a thought experiment. I had raised, and I think it was our Strange News segment or something, like something to that effect, which was the idea of brain transference, right? What was that Faustian bargain we pitched, or that devil's deal we pitched, wherein someone could save your brain, or the program of your brain, but they could only put it in a pig? Is that pig now human?
Right.
These are the logical questions that we will have to ask. Please, 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 if you have not yet done so, do us a favor, do yourself a favor, and check out our previous episode on the concept of legal personhood, which is really a mixed bag of badgers around the world, depending on where you go. We talked about, you know what it was? It restarted recently when we spoke about the elephants in Colorado who had recently lost their bid to get out of that zoo there in Colorado. This will only become more complex as human understanding of what we call consciousness and intelligence continues to acquire sophistication and nuance. I love what you're bringing up there, Matt, which is the idea, the big question, the eternal question for the human is, are you really seeing something akin to you in some respect, or are you anthropomorphizing, which is just the fancy pants way of saying, are you projecting what you would imagine human-like traits to be on a non-human animal? And I gotta say it, you guys, I am such a sucker for those videos that I usually in my head call, they're just like us videos. You know, I love it when especially really expressive domestic animals like huskies. Huskies get it, dude. Huskies get it, and they're sassy, and they have an attitude, and they sometimes they, you know, we've all seen the clips, I hope, so I don't sound crazy, where someone asks their husky a question, and the husky's like, no. Yeah, yeah. Or they say, hey, it's, and you could, and that's just because, you know, as we talked about in Ridiculous History, recent series on the domestication of these amazing creatures, the dogs, the canines, that's because they evolved to communicate more efficiently with humans than many other animals. But just because they've evolved to communicate with humans more efficiently or in a way that's more understandable to humans doesn't mean that other animals are any less intelligent. They feel pain. They love loss. If you prick them, do they not bleed? To rip off Billy Shakes, who is
good old Billy Shakes. Shake yeah. your spear at Shakespeare. This article from Axios from late last year, using AI to talk to animals, I think is super interesting. Researchers are building an AI system that they hope will one day allow humans to understand the many languages that animals use to communicate with one another. Just a couple of things, what they're saying here. We are facing a biodiversity crisis, Earth Species Project CEO Katie Zakarian said during a demo of Nature LM at a recent Axios AI Plus Summit in San Francisco. She said, the situation we are in today is driven from a disconnection with the rest of nature. We believe that AI is leading us to this inevitability that we will decode animal communication and come back into connection. Between the lines, this is what Axios had to say about this, sort of summing it up. Translation in the broadest sense is something that generative AI has proven to be quite good at. Sometimes that's translating from one human language to another, but the technology is also adept at transforming text from one genre to another. An added wrinkle with translating animal languages is that instead of moving between two known languages, we have a limited understanding of how animals communicate and what they are capable of conveying through speech. Researchers know, for example, that birds make different sounds, to your point, Ben, when they are singing songs as compared to sounding a warning call. They also have determined that many species have individual names for one another, and some, like prairie dogs, have a system of nouns and adjectives to describe predators. Earth Species Project is one of many endeavors looking to tap AI to address planetary concerns. I think that's an interesting spin on it, the idea of like closing the gap, I guess, between various aspects of the natural world. But I do think it's also interesting how they point out that just because you can translate, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're like having a conversation. So I think, but again, it's also hard to kind of parse where we do draw the line for personhood and how like kind of selfishly human centric that concept even is.
Yeah. It sounds amazing. It makes me imagine a time when any animal could communicate with some device, right? That's around the animal. Mm-hmm. And you hear it in your head or your headphones or wherever you are. Almost like an ESP kind of thing, right?
Well, you know, and also that's a real feature of that comic that we're talking about. The way the animals communicate is this kind of broken English that implies a sort of real-time translation of something more very specific to the species that is just kind of meant to be interpreted, you know, by human ears.
And to that point, we are getting close. Now, Colby, we're bringing it back to the earlier philosophical quandaries as well. But to that point that we just made, If you are a lover of dogs, you may already know this, or a lover of a certain other animal species, you will see that there are devices out there that purport to do something close to this kind of communication. I'm thinking specifically about the button boards. I've put a couple links in our chat here. The button boards, you see it mostly in dog videos, and I'm smiling because I love animals, even the human ones. There's a series of science doesn't consider them totally legit, but there are a series of these button pads, like the old school Nintendo running trackpad.
You would get a Skinner box situation, like some of the old school pigeon talk, like the talking chicken, like hitting the buttons and making communication sounds kind of thing.
Similar, a little more nuanced, because each button has, you know, a command and a specific consistent location, such that if your doggo buddy is smart enough, they can try to communicate with you. So instead of barking, this doesn't apply to huskies because they can basically speak. But if you have a really smart dog, like an Australian Shepherd or a collie or a poodle, then the idea is that once they learn this location and series of buttons and they learn which reaction it incites in their human pal, then they will go up and instead of barking at you, they'll get your attention and they'll hit the button that says walk, or they'll hit the button that says treat. You know, or maybe you have the name of their favorite toy. Obviously, science agrees they're not reading these things because we don't know any literate dogs just yet, but they know the location and they know the reaction. So this goes to show that we're getting closer and closer as a civilization to something like bridging the linguistic and cognitive gap. And I think that's amazing. And to your point, Noel, yes, there are animals that are not canids that seem to be able to do the same thing. The question is, how do we frame it? What's our perspective, right? Does the crow understand what it's saying when it says, "All right, then, mate"? I'm referring to a specific
the one with the one video with the monocle and the top hat, right?
Oh yeah, yeah.
I know that crow.
You guys know Alfie?
That rascal, absolutely. Alfie's, but you guys, I mean, I'm not trying to be like mega like puritanically tree huggery about this, but I do think it's worth talking about just this idea of personhood and how, you know, human centric it is. And I know that we all benefit from, again, I'm going to sound like I'm being like a total hippie here, but the enslavement of animals. But there is a certain philosophical thing to kind of contend with about this notion of what personhood is, especially as things like AI start to get more and more intense. Yes. And more human like. I just think it's something that we kind of need to address.
Well, is the human mind itself not already a large language model? Talking about being anthrocentric, right? Anthrocentrism is a huge bag of badgers. It's a difficult thing to quarrel with and to really get a human mind around or outside of. You could ask the same question, you know, let's just flip the script for a second. Hey, we don't have to go too deep into this unless we want to do an episode on it, but let's think about it this way. What if evolution went just a little bit differently? What if somebody got to the superpowers first, right? The way that humans reproduce and the way their brains work. And of course, one of the greatest features of the human, the thumb. Sorry, everybody. Beat you to that one. What if those things happened or something like that to another species, and the primates ended up as a result not attaining Homo sapienhood, right? Or not even, you know, not reaching past maybe habilis or something like that. Like, what would those new creatures dominating the earth, what would the descendants of, say, the elephant or the corvid, or God forgive us, the octopus, what would they think about humans? Would they have the same viral videos of us like trying to wave four fingers like octopus arms and going, "Oh my God, little Daryl's just like us"?
Well, yeah, well, that too, but also like, what if a quote unquote higher species, higher intelligence, higher life form were to enter the chat, and then we began to be subjugated and treated the way we treat quote unquote lower life forms. Like, it's just, I don't know.
We
can't
get buttons.
Help.
We get a series of buttons and we can press the button.
And shock collars, right? Mm-hmm.
And you know, they don't make buttons that say, who am I? Dad? Mom? Where pack? You know, like, what is Meadow? Who is Meadow?
Yes, yeah, I love that point, Matt, because there are no self-awareness buttons. There's no button for existential crisis, but there are buttons for specific people, because we know that animals can have favorites. So I've seen, I want to say, a couple of videos where there was some influencer whose animal appeared to prefer her partner more. And she's trying to get the dog to do something, and it just keeps hitting the button that says dad. And then it starts barking at her. But again, to the chicken scratch or the counting horse idea, another inescapable part of this communication paraphernalia or attempt at communication technology is that animals, dogs especially, but all non-human animals are very good at picking up unconscious human cues, right? So are we just priming the response we want to see and then telling ourselves something different is happening? It's quite a pickle. And the real answer I would posit, Colby, and thank you for the excellent email, the real answer that we're getting at here is simply this: the human animal does not understand the concept of personhood. The human animal still can't grasp the concept that other human animals are indeed people. And that's where the problem begins.
That's a pickle, my man. That's very well put, and something to put in our collective pipes and smoke, for lack of a better term. I don't know, Matt, you got anything else to add before we move on?
I don't know. I think I know what people is.
You do. Like what you said too. Guys, I had this other incredible email from a listener, like almost like telling this story about a fictional chimeric organ farm, but I think we're running a little long on this segment. That just created so much incredible conversation. So I think I'm going to save this one for next week, if that's okay with you guys.
Yes, sir.
Let's take a quick break, hear a word from our sponsor, and then we'll return with more messages from you. High
Five Casino. Hey, friend, you heard about the High Five Casino app? Man, it's the real deal. Completely free to play, and with more than 1,500 games, the fun never stops. The return to player is the industry's best. So if you play more, you win more. And that's why they got over 33 million loyal players. High Five Casino also has this Boost on Demand feature where you can activate free spins whenever you want. Download High Five Casino app or play at high5casino.com.
High Five Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit high5casino.com for more details.
Download the app today.
High Five Casino.
And we've returned. We are jumping to the phone lines to hear a message from Plebe. And I think this is a really interesting way to bridge the gap between our discussion before the break and into an even deeper thing within our own minds, potentially. So let's hear this message from Plebe.
Hey, fellas. Plebe in the Northwest here. I was just curious if you guys have come across this crazy ass podcast called The Telepathy Tapes. It's based on nonverbal or barely verbal autistic children that are communicating with their parents or caregivers or teachers telepathically. And they also communicate with each other on this place called The Hill at night when they dream telepathically. And there's like a huge number of these people that are all communicating to each other in this ethereal space. I really want you guys to look into it. Let me know what you think. It's very crazy. It makes you think about, like, they talk about an autistic child that can read Hebrew. And they're like, where did you learn to read Hebrew? And the person says, from the priest. And they're like, what other languages can you learn? And they're like, and they type Hiero. And they're like hieroglyphics? And they're like, yes. So they show her some hieroglyphics and they read the hieroglyphics. Excuse my language. Like, absolutely bananas. Just to be opened up to this concept, because we already know about the, I just said that, like, CIA document with the astral projection and the Mars viewing. It's like a legit document. It's great. I mean, sorry. It's crazy. And then you have that in combination with multiple remote viewing trials, and then you have these people that are learning to communicate non-verbally because the human desire and condition like requires us to communicate. It's just fascinating. So look into the tapes, let everybody know about it. Let me know what you think. Absolutely bananas. All right. Later.
Whoa. Wow. Plebe. My goodness. That's a lot to take in. And just to put this message out there, we are not sponsored by the telepathy tapes. We're not connected to the telepathy tapes. That is another podcast. We are going to talk about it now. Initial thoughts upon hearing this.
Initial thoughts. Yeah, Plebe, thank you so much for reaching out. The podcast in question garnered a lot of attention and it garnered quite a bit of controversy. I haven't listened to all of the podcast. I have listened to a few episodes, and I have to be honest, just ethically, I'm required to say this. There are very different interpretations of what's going on here, similar to, as you said, Matt, the concept of communication cross species. And I'm not saying that autistic people are not human at all, or anybody on the spectrum is not, but I do think the evidence is clear that this is a form of projection and not astral projection. And my argument here, unfortunately, would be that everything that I have encountered, not as an expert here, shows me that this could be dangerous to the treatment of people who do need special care.
Interesting. Okay. Well, let's listen to a bit of the trailer for this podcast that is available on YouTube. You can watch right now. Let's just watch a tiny bit together just so we get a sense of what the show says it is.
Joining us today to shed some light, Dr. Diane Powell.
I'm working with children who have been reported by a parent to be able to read their mind.
The data was so compelling and accurate that I had to follow it, even though I knew I was risking my scientific reputation.
So let's just put that there, right? This concept that there is a doctor who is interested enough in this stuff and receiving, you know, specific messages from parents or caregivers who have children on the autism spectrum, you know, self-reporting these things. There's now a neuroscientist, Dr. Diane Powell, who's looking into that. That's what the show is about. If you go to the website, guys, you can see that they've got it's thetelepathytapes.com. They have a section that they call the test library. And in this test library, you can see individual videos that appear to be individual examinations, like a one-off test, basically, that is run, that appear to test potential telepathy of some sort or brain connection of some sort that would be abnormal or would appear to, you know, not be the way that human beings communicate and function generally the way we observe. If you click on any of these individual tapes, it shows that you have to join the organization or you have to become a member of some sort and pay some money in order to see these individual things. That makes sense, right? If you're attempting to monetize something like a podcast, like a website, like, you know, further studies, but it unfortunately, at least from this end, feels a bit weird because I would love to gain access to those raw tapes just as somebody who's interested in the topic to at least test for my own brain whether or not I believe these individuals to have these sorts of things, right? Or to be able to communicate in these ways. It does feel a little weird.
Yeah, I hear you. And that doesn't necessarily, to be clear, folks, that doesn't necessarily mean that it is somehow functioning with bad intentions, right? And from what I understand, Matt and Plebe and Noel and Triforce, what I understand is that proponents of the telepathy tapes have themselves criticized the critics and said, hey, you're being ableist because these people are not communicating in the methods that you or via the methods that you feel comfortable calling communication. However, again, there are, just trying to be very fair, it seems like there are some serious issues with some of the methodology of the test. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah. There is one specific test you can view in the trailer. The test itself, the tape, you can view it on their website. It is titled UNO or UNO 1 Houston. And it is a test where there is someone who is being tested for telepathic abilities sitting at a table. Their caregiver is sat next to them, and Dr. Diane Powell is behind them, and she is showing the camera, which is positioned across from the table, UNO cards. So shuffling a deck, then showing an UNO card to the camera. Then the person with supposed telepathic abilities is pointing to a separate object that has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 on it, and then it also has like plus and minus on it. So this person can point to plus 2, and that would represent the draw 2 card that you might be familiar with in an UNO deck. As you're watching this tape, specifically in the trailer, I haven't seen the whole thing, it appears to show the test subject looking directly at the camera as the next UNO card is drawn. And in my mind, because of the way that test is set up, you cannot rule out the possibility that the test subject can see a reflection in the lens or in a part of the camera body or in, you know, something that is slightly reflective there, the card that is behind him. And you would have to rule that kind of thing out. If you're going to redo that test over and over and over again, you'd have to change the variables enough and test it and test it and test it to really show that that person has the abilities that they're purporting, right? And again, I haven't listened to the entire show. I haven't watched this whole thing, but you would have to repeat these tests enough to at least convince me or, you know, any scientific body that that single individual shows those capabilities.
That single individual. Yeah. Yes. Because they're not, to be clear again, there's no argument that this is something for everyone who is nonverbal on the autism spectrum.
Oh no, not at all. Again, these are self-reported cases where the caregiver reaches out, right, and says, hey, I've found this to be true. You also can't discount those individual reactions from a caregiver or findings of a caregiver. So in my mind, it is just a fascinating subject, a fascinating concept for a podcast and a show, and I can't wait to dig into it deeper. So thank you, Plebe, for reaching out to us and sending us this. I would say I reached out to my ex-wife, who has a lot of experience in this field with children on the autism spectrum at the Marcus Institute here in Atlanta. And she was fascinated by it. And hopefully we're going to have a further discussion about it, because it is one of those things that when you work with especially a child who is nonverbal, the incredible communication that occurs that is not through speaking, and that can be developed and honed. It's mind-boggling, because it's just a different way of communicating.
Yeah, and I love that you're pointing that out, Matt. Three quick things here. First, yes, we know that the majority, especially when you're in person, the majority of human communication is in fact nonverbal. It's something like 60%, 40% mix. Secondly, we do know, to be absolutely clear, that in certain cases, there are people who are diagnosed on the autism spectrum who do exhibit abilities that the majority of humanity would consider extraordinary or superhuman. I'm thinking of, for example, just for an example of an ability, Stephen Wiltshire, who is one of the this phenomenal painter with an artist with eidetic memory. He's the guy you probably read about. We discussed him in Real Life Superpower series, who can fly in a helicopter over a city. And then over a period of days, he can reproduce a massive, accurate portrait, really, of an entire city. And he's done this around the world.
Is this like sort of akin to photographic memory type situations, or people that can, like, you know, read a book once and then tell you exactly what page and passage, you know, and paragraph a particular phrase appears on?
Yeah, photographic memory is like Venn diagram with eidetic memory. I was talking about this in an email with Big Shucks, I think. I don't want to get too far away from the subject, but it's an excellent question. Photographic memory is the way it's depicted often in fiction and film. The science is still really hotly contested over whether or not that actually exists. And then eidetic memory largely exists in children under 12, in about 2 to 15% of children under 12. And what we're talking about here in this exploration is really the mystery of communication and the fact that often there is a certain dogmatic approach to science in ivory towers. That is simply true. There's a there's this hierarchy of questions that seem to be allowed or disallowed. And so sometimes if you stray too far from what is considered quote unquote legitimate scientific inquiry, then people may be dismissed out of hand. This is something our associate Russell Tard dealt with when he was looking into his research. Now,
sure,
to exercise humanity here too, I think this is one of the key things. We can't automatically be dismissive. The reason, and I'm not hoping I don't come off dismissive when you ask that first question, Matt, the reason that I and other people argue this could be potentially dangerous to people, children on parts of the autism spectrum is because the argument has never been that this is all kids, right? The argument has been some kids, as you said, Matt, self-reported. So if there is, for instance, a caregiver who is trying to force these kind of techniques or things on the kid, then it could be quite distressing, even with the best of intentions. So it's something we need to be very careful about. And again, you know, I hope I don't sound like militant on this. I'm sort of holding this up and feeling all sides of it. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. It does, and I think you're doing a fine job.
Well, I think the desire may also rise out of hope and desperation, right? Hope that you will one day be able to communicate with your child the way you see other parents communicating with their children. You hope for that, so, and you desire that so deeply that the possibility that you could potentially communicate with them in this other way drives you so strong that you may allow yourself to see or believe or feel things that may not be fully true simply because you need it. You want it so badly. And again, that is not to talk down at any parent, right, of a child on the spectrum or anything like that. It's just, that is just human nature to desire that, I think. But yeah, guys, have you ever had the Hill dream?
No, I don't know. Maybe. I got a couple of recurring ones. Tell me about it.
I don't know if I've had it either, but I've certainly had a recurring dream on a hill where flight is possible, and there are a bunch of other human beings flying around on this hill. There's some other specifics to it. I want to learn more about it, but it's a recurring thing. I would say this one feels like how would I put it? Almost like a bunch of students of some teacher hanging out on a hill, flying around to like treetops and stuff, and being kids, kind of. It's very weird.
It's very strange. And surely when we look at these things, because dreams, also memory of dreams, changes over time, just like memory of any other event, it's best to write them down, honestly, no matter what.
Yeah, because they just dissipate. Mm-hmm. Like tears in the rain. Dream motifs are interesting, or I guess themes, you know, what's the word, kind of flavors that are universal. I have this one all the time, different kind of twists on it, but it usually involves like having the opportunity of a lifetime and being completely unprepared for it. Like I've joined my favorite band. I'm in Radiohead, but I don't know how to play any of their songs. And I'm on stage at like Carnegie Hall or, you know, the Hollywood Bowl or something.
What I love about this is, everybody does have something like dreaming, unless you have some specific and serious conditions. The difference is usually when people tell you that they don't dream, they mean they don't remember what their brain is doing in that defragging process. And Matt, to your point, I think this is tremendously illustrative of how people specifically approach what they consider real or what they consider bunk, because there are a lot of people who might have heard telepathy tapes or a conversation now where we're striving to be objective and fair. And they might have said they think that's malarkey, but then they might believe that they have a light ability toward precognition, right? Or that they are meeting outside entities in their dreams. And I say this as a guy who for many, many decades has had recurring conversations with a talking blue tiger that doesn't, and they're lucid dreams, and it doesn't give a shit about what's going on. Sorry, beep me there. It doesn't give a shit about what's going on in my life. It wants to talk about very specific forms of philosophy. It's like Alice in Wonderland, the caterpillar kind of. And I don't know why that happens, and I don't know why it keeps happening. But yeah, so everybody kind of picks and chooses, and that comes from, to bring it all back around, that seems to come from, as you so beautifully put, this deep desire to communicate, you know? And yeah, it reminds me, we should do an episode. We should do an actual episode on dream experiments. There's so much there.
My God, yes. I've got this one where there's this talking raccoon with a bunch of weapons, and he sounds just like Bradley Cooper.
You're Rocky Raccoon? You're not going to let go of the Guardians. Beatles fame?
All right. I'm sorry. It's going back to that. Well, all right. Well, hey, thank you so much, Plebe. Thank you. And y'all tell us what you think about the telepathy tapes, this concept of ESP, who, you know, what could it mean? Are humans just not ready for that kind of extraordinary thing? Do we just, are there too many movies about it? It just feels like fantasy or not real life. How would we convince everyone that ESP is real if there's scientific backing to it?
Was that a Queen reference you made there, Matt?
I have no idea.
He said, is it real life or is it just fantasy? Something along those lines. That might have been unintentional. Mamma mia, I say. And I think these are all very important questions.
I don't know the rest of it. So there you go.
Open up your eyes and
anywhere the wind blows, Matt. Anywhere the wind blows.
Join us on the hill. We'll be right back.
It takes one guy out there to say, who's that Kyle who thinks he can just get on a microphone on a podcast and start publicizing this?
From iHeart Podcasts and Tenderfoot TV comes a new true crime podcast, Crook County.
I got recruited into the mob when I was 17 years old.
Meet Kenny, an enforcer for the legendary Chicago Outfit.
And that was my mission, to snuff the life out of this guy.
He lived a secret double life as a firefighter paramedic for the Chicago Fire Department.
I had a wife and I had two children. Nobody knew anything.
People are dying. Is he doing this every night?
Torn between two worlds.
I'm covering up murders that these cops are doing.
He was a freaking crazy man.
We don't know who he is, really.
He is my father. And I had no idea about any of this until now. Welcome to Crook County. Series premiere February 11th. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we have returned, folks. Full disclosure, 2/3 of us are on the road, and the road holds its price. We are going to get into a kind of loose third act of our listener mail segment. We're going to start with a great reaction to our two-part series, or something we mentioned in our two-part series, two episodes on the Darien Gap. Please check that out if you haven't heard of it before. In the meantime, we present to you a story from Della, which I don't know about you guys, gave me no small amount of travel FOMO. Want to hear it? Here it goes. Hi, guys, says Della. We just got back from a cruise to Antarctica. While on a tour in Ushuaia in Tierra del Fuego, waiting for the cruise to board, the guide mentioned that this is the south end of a road that can be traveled all the way to, oh, forgive my pronunciation, Utqiagvik on the Arctic Ocean coast of Alaska. Della's talking about the Pan American Highway here. The guide said that the only break in the road is the Darien Pass and how dangerous it is to travel there. So I was very excited to hear your new episodes on the subject. You guys remember how we talked about that wild plan in part one of our Darien Gap episodes, or chapter one, where even the New York Times co-signed this wacky idea to just bomb the hell
just
out of
it.
Panama.
It's fine. Yeah. What could go wrong?
And Panama said, okay, no.
Panama said, you guys, you already have a canal. And then we shared a specific article from New York Times at the time that that said, oh, this will be fine. We'll just put, you know, 30-something nuclear bombs to obliterate the Darien Gap. We'll build a canal. We'll make a bridge over it. There are people who live there, but, you know, they don't vote. They don't subscribe to the Times.
Yeah. Dude, did you guys see the news with Panama happening right now?
Yes. Yeah, the Rubio stuff, right?
Yeah, the Rubio stuff, but the canceling the Hong Kong contract and allowing the U.S. to travel through there free, and the response from Panama basically saying, yeah, we're ready for war. And their nuclear option would, and they said this, a former president of Panama said, well, we would just open the gap. We'd open the Darien Gap and let everybody in. That would be our final chess piece move.
We call that brinksmanship. Yeah.
Indeed. Guys, I just wanted to chime in really quickly because I have to pop a little bit early from today's episode to make a flight. But a friend of mine, old friend, mentioned having heard our Darien Gap episode and hipped me to a documentary that a friend of his did for a Singapore news agency that follows a handful of Chinese families from Ecuador to the U.S. through the Darien Gap. And it has a really good kind of overview of the logistics of traveling that route. And it is called Walk the Line, a CNA insider documentary, and it's very well done, and I highly recommend checking it out.
Awesome. Thank you for the recommendation, Noel, and be safe out there, man.
I will. Thanks, fellas. I'll see you guys soon.
Bye, Noel.
We hang out all the time. Bye, Noel.
Sure too.
And we'll also be hanging out February 19th. Get thee to Brooklyn. Check out Stuff They Don't Want You to Know presents A Conspiracy of Sound. It's just for you. The show starts at 7:30. If you show up at 6:30, you can be a part of the show at the legendary National Sawdust in Williamsburg.
That's less than a week. Get there. Get them tickets now.
Yeah, we've got to make sure our whole team has tickets as well. Don't worry. We're on it, and we promise we're not going to deploy a nuclear device. We 99% promise we are not going to deploy a nuclear device.
Well, now there's definitely going to be undercover folks there checking us out and tracking our phones. Ben?
Oh, geez, Matt, I've got some offline conversations. So let's go back. Let's go back to this note from Della. So Della says, there's a lot more to the story of nuking the jungle, the Darien Gap, to build a road. And there is an Alaska connection. And Della, you all live in Alaska. You continue, back in the 1950s, there was a plan to build a new canal through Panama by detonating nukes to test whether the theory would work. Edward Heller proposed Project Chariot, a plan to detonate 6 nukes off the Alaska coast at Cape Thompson to create a new harbor. So we're deploying, we're placing nukes just so, almost like erasing a land tile in a strategy game, so that we can make a harbor. We can carve out a big enough piece of land for boats to pass through.
Well, I gotta say, it's a much better use of them than, you know, obliterating cities that have people in them, but still not great.
Yeah. Like if you woke up one day and someone said, hey, good news, bad news. We've got too many nukes. You got to get rid of 6 of them today. That's the bad news. Good news is you can choose between a coast on Alaska or, a major metropolitan area of your choice.
Let's go with the land tile.
Let's go with the land tile. And as Della says, what could go wrong? Oh, yeah, it's delicate tundra and temporary home to a multitude of migratory birds and caribou herds, not to mention the folks who live in the village nearby. But who could really be hurt here? I need a sarcasm font, by the way. We'll do that again for you, Della. But who could really be hurt here? So fortunately, You continue. A group of pesky biologists from the University of Alaska Fairbanks and the natives who lived in the nearby village of Point Hope put up a brave and lively opposition to the plan, and it was eventually abandoned. Several scientists lost their federal grants and their jobs due to their unwillingness to sign off on a project that their research showed would cause a great deal of harm to the ecology and people in the area. I highly recommend the book, The Firecracker Boys by Dan O'Neill, which tells their story. To end, says Della, I couldn't get a picture of the ice dome that surrounds the flat earth, bummer, out in Antarctica, but here is a photo of a very cute baby elephant seal and a picture of my dogs, just because they are Nico, aka the dragon, aka a-hole, as in why are you such an, and Otto, aka goofball, aka what do you have in your mouth? Anyway, thanks and keep up the good work. I love the open-minded way you approach topics and your willingness to listen to other points of view. You can use this on air. I suck at clever nicknames. Looking forward to the next episode. Oh, I want to go to Antarctica so bad, Matt.
Yeah.
So bad.
Well, there's going to be an ice wall until I don't see it with my eyes. No, that's not how I would. I don't know. Yes. But I share that desire.
That's how we should pitch it to our suits, right? We should just say, guys, thanks for making the time for this meeting. Really important stuff we need to sort out.
Have you ever not seen the ice wall? Me neither.
And this got us thinking too about nuclear explosions in engineering. There have been a lot of very strange drawing board propositions to use nuclear explosions for great feats of engineering. You know what I mean? To basically build a better dynamite. And the issue people are the reason that's not happening all the time now is because, thank goodness, people learned about radiation at some point and contamination. So now a lot of the engineering related to nuclear devices, nuclear technology, is thankfully how do we build less dangerous nuclear structures and devices, and then how do we build like fusion, right? Sustainable fusion, things like that. And then the super fascinating one: how do we warn people or warn some other civilization millennia hence about where all the nuclear waste is buried, right?
With a skull and crossbones emoji.
Mm-hmm. And what if the creatures that find it don't have skulls? Like, how do we teach them, right? What if it's too late? That's where you get to stuff. There's a real fascinating Stuff You Should Know episode on this from back in earlier evenings, and we talked about it in the past. It goes into these really innovative ideas about genetically engineering plants that emit a bioluminescent glow when exposed to radiation, right? Or building stone megaliths that somehow convey the danger of the area.
Yeah, I remember reading about all that stuff. Megaliths and hieroglyphs, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And who knows, by that point, people may have, or the descendants of people may have, some sort of extraordinary ability. This is a lot to think on. This is probably going to be, I think, a future episode idea, kind of a Venn diagram of stuff they don't want you to know in ridiculous history. Matt, if I could pitch it to you, the top X craziest things people tried to do with nukes.
Yeah, that's a no-brainer.
we're in. Thank you so much to Della. As we said, we're going to keep this loose. There are two letters from home for us. We discussed this last week. We didn't quite get to it, but we're still cracking away on following up with everybody who's taking the time to write or to call. Here is a correspondence we had with our pal Mike, the exotic landscaper. Hey, just listen to your Strange News program on the California wildfires. As a federal wildland fireman in South California, I appreciate you guys shedding some light on the situation. I was not sent to any of the fires in LA, but I was on the line for the fire here in the San Bernardino National Forest. If you have any questions about the federal side, I would be more than happy to answer them. Also, as far as the California inmate crews are concerned, those dudes and ladies are the real deal. Good to hear, Mike. I've worked with several of them, and they, for the most part, are excited to get the training and experience because they can be picked up by the Forest Service upon their release. Those dudes are like Rocky and Rocky One, and a lot of the California fire cats I've worked with are like Rocky in the beginning of Rocky Three. Anyway, thanks again for the show. And so we go on and we ask Mike a couple of questions. We say, thank you for cutting past the unfortunate noise and headlines of inmate firefighters. We also point out whenever we have these conversations, especially in the American justice system, being locked up does not automatically make you a bad person. Matt, I know is very important to you and me both to point out that these are human beings with communities. Logically, they have a moral obligation to protect the people and the places they love. And then we ask for the following question. What are the primary things that you guys there on the line need people to know about the fires in the larger context? And Mike says, first and foremost, the federal engines are green. Take to mean green vehicles, right? No, and Mike also says, he sends a little aggravation here. Nobody knows the difference between California fire, local departments, and the Forest Service. Us federal cats only work the fires on federal land. Also, us on the federal side are not technically firefighters, which is so weird, right? Because they are fighting fires.
Yeah.
But technically not firefighters.
Well, what else are they doing?
Yeah, right. Exactly. That's a question we have to follow up with you on, Mike. Mike says, our job title is forestry technician. That way we don't get some of the benefits firefighters get. So maybe it's a budgetary move. Also, we stand to lose about half our pay because Congress won't pass a Pay Protection Act. Plus, the hiring freeze has affected our numbers when we're already low on personnel. And Mike has included some other stuff here. One of our favorite facts we learned was, since we aren't technically firefighters, there's a few of us that refer to ourselves as exotic landscapers.
That's beautiful. Well, a lot of the techniques in fighting a fire is altering the land and, you know, the foliage, the trees, the ground cover and all that stuff like that's in the pathway of the fire. Right. Yeah, I could totally see how landscaping is one of the primary things that they do.
Yeah, isn't that fascinating? We often forget that skill sets the average person on the outside might not see as related. These skill sets often coalesce, you know. So of course, being really well versed in forestry management is going to make you far more prepared than the average person to tackle a wildfire. And we are happy to report in related California fire updates that our good friend and colleague, the one and only Mr. Miles Gray, is back on Daily Zeitgeist. And do check him out. It's his return is an episode not to be missed for everybody who is, whether an exotic landscaper, a firefighter, however you are involved. Please stay safe out there and know that we have your back. We're going to move on here. We said we want to end on an up note. Matt, I'm sure you saw this too. We got a great funny letter, actually an invitation from our pal Ward. Did you see this one?
No, tell me about it.
Oh, here we go. Okay. So Ward says, hey guys, I love the podcast and listen to it a lot. Thank you, Ward. Thanks for helping us keep the lights on. Ward says, I'm in Greenville, South Carolina. I own a store called The Mushroom Spot. This is a nano farm and retail store for mushrooms, parentheses, the legal ones. I know how you have commented on fungi and mushrooms a lot, or fungi, whatever your preference. We have all kinds of cool speakers and workshops too. Fungi are amazing and essential. Anyhow, here's the invitation. I was contacting you to make sure you knew about this year's Georgia Bigfoot Conference happening March 21st to 22nd in Demarest, Georgia. I had not heard of this, but Matt, I swear you mentioned a Bigfoot conference recently.
Well, there's the big alien one, the Contact in the Desert one that we got invited to last year, but we couldn't make it.
Yeah.
This is brand new and checking it out right now. Let's see how far away it is from Let's see. Putting it in. Looks like it's about an hour away.
Ooh, that's doable. Okay, so that's okay. We won't turn this into our logistics conversation, but
that's doable. Is what I'm saying.
It's doable. It's doable. We always check this the first time we get invited to something that feels local, because depending on, like, Georgia is a weirdly shaped state, so you know something in Savannah is much more difficult for us to get to than something an hour away. I hope I'm not over-explaining Georgia, because we have a lot of listeners in Georgia already.
Oh, yeah, of course. Dude, wait. We're going to have to... There's a restaurant over there.
Yeah.
It's an oyster bar. Ooh, there's a Cuban cafe. Oh, they've got good food.
Oyster bar? We're in. You know what? I'm sure we could talk Nolan to this one, because I think he had a little FOMO about MUFON.
Why don't we knock... on some wood, huh? Wood knock? No? Anyone? Anybody? Yes. Bueller? All right.
Great. I've got to be quiet. It's like 4 a.m. over here. Okay. So Ward continues. I am not a conspiracy theorist, nor do I give much credence to a physical Bigfoot, but who knows? I like the idea of an interdimensional cryptid. We do too. That might happen with aliens too. Who knows? But it is fun to think about and a great exercise for the mind. The Mushroom Spot will be a vendor at this year's Bigfoot Conference. Congratulations, Ward. I have never been before, though my brother has. He's going to sell his hot sauce there, Matt, this year. If you come to the festival, please stop by my table. I'd love to meet you all. Please keep up the good work as long as they, whomever they are, permit you. And even after, and this is my favorite part, mush love, Ward.
Oh no.
Did we get a drum riff for that one, Andrew? Also, Andrew, do you want to go to this thing with us?
Yes, I would like to go. I want to meet Bigfoot.
Yes, congratulations everybody tuning in. That is the first on-air reaction from our producer Triforce. We did it, Matt. We got him. This is our show for the evening. Thank you so much, friends and neighbors, fellow conspiracy realists, for spending some of your time with us. We also want to thank, of course, Colby Jack Cheese, Plebe, Ward, Mike, Della, Miles, and everybody who has reached out to us on the internets, who has given us a summons on a telephonic device, or who has stared into the void and written us a letter, just like Ward. Oh my God, much love. All right. You can find us on the internet, should you sip the social meds, Instagram, Conspiracy Stuff Show, Twitter, nay, X, that would be Conspiracy Stuff. You can also find us where we are on YouTube. You can see all those old videos from our war stories that we mentioned. That's youtube.com/conspiracy stuff. But let's say that you, for one reason or another, have decided to pull back a little bit from social media. Let's say you just heard our episode on social media's damaging effects on attention span, and you're more like a hear me out, let me just call you kind of person. Matt, riddle me this. What do people do in that situation?
Well, you pick up your phone, you dial 1-833-STDWYTK. It is our voicemail system. You've got 3 minutes. Give yourself a cool nickname and say whatever you'd like. Just do in the message. Let us know if we can use your name and message on the air. If you got more to say than can fit in that voicemail, why not instead send us a good old-fashioned email? We are
the entities that read every piece of correspondence we receive. Be well aware yet unafraid. Sometimes the void writes back. Wait, you might be saying, really? Really, though? Does it happen? Well, there's one way to find out. Send us the links, send us the photos, send us the story. Most importantly, send us ideas for episodes in the future. You are the most important part of this show, and we'd love for you to join us one step away from the light. Out here in the dark, we are Conspiracy at iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.